Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is Dan Baer's interview with the writer, director, producer, and star of Problemista, Julio Torres.
This is the story of Alejandro. His mother gave him everything, but she had a recurring dream of Alejandro leaving the safe world she created, where he'd face the dangers she tried so hard to keep him from.
Lo siento, señora Fuentes, pero Inmigración decidió no considerar la aplicación. Alejandro Martinez.
Yes, hi, let's speak.
Mr. Khalil is ready for you.
Thank you.
Okay, look, you don't have a while. You have a month to find someone to co-sign your visa. And if you don't, you have to leave the U.S.
I started freelancing for this lady.
I'm late. I know I'm late. I'm so late. I don't...
Oh, this menu. What is it with walnuts? Walnuts, walnuts, walnuts. It's like a cafe for squirrels.
Walnuts, they go very nicely with the salad.
Do I look like I need educating on fine cuisine?
You think this lady can sponsor you?
I mean, we'll see.
We'll see.
Welcome, everyone, to the Next Best Picture Podcaster. Oh. We are talking with Julio Torres, the writer, director, and star of the new film Problemista. Julio, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm very excited to be talking to you, finally, about this movie, which I had the good fortune to see at the world premiere at South by Southwest a year ago, which was incredible. But I have to ask, you know, like, it's finally coming out a year after you premiere your baby to the world. What does it feel like for that to be finally happening so long after you first premiered it?
It feels like I haven't stopped premiering it. Yeah.
I can imagine.
Yeah. I enjoy making work. It is what makes me the happiest, is creating something. I did not anticipate that the showing of the creating of something was going to take longer than making it. But I am glad people finally are getting access to it.
Yeah, myself as well. When I first saw it, there's just so much going on in it, and it's so creative and different from anything I've seen. And I'm so happy that people are finally getting to experience it for themselves. I wanted to rewind a bit in the wheels of your mind, because there are so many ideas and themes and motifs at play in Problemista. And I was wondering, what was the first image you got in your head when you were writing this script? Where did this film come from?
So the film is very rooted in experience, but Elizabeth's way of speaking was one of the earliest things that I was really holding on to. And then the idea of Craigslist being an entity was when I really tapped into what became the tone or the world of the movie.
I love that you bring up Craigslist too, because I keep thinking about that in the movie, and like, how do you go about casting the part of a conglomerate of electronics and ads?
I was like thinking of Craigslist, and I was thinking of the ads and the sort of menacing spell like lyrical gibberish that they sound like. And then it just felt sort of ominous and like sing-songy. And then immediately my friend Larry Owens popped into my head, and he did such a beautiful job at personifying Craigslist as this like sea witch kind of creature.
Very much so. You hear that siren call of Craigslist. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
I know that you created or co-created Los Spookies, but this is your first time directing. And it's your first feature film at all. When you were writing the script, did you always picture yourself directing it, or did that come later?
No, that came later. The script was ostensibly done, and then starting to think of directors, and that road seemed like it wasn't really leading anywhere. And then people around me started suggesting directing it, and Tilda, who was already on board to be in it, was very excited about me directing it. So yeah, we just sort of went for it.
I love that you specifically mentioned that Tilda was very excited about you directing it, because I was curious, because she's fantastic in the movie. She's fantastic in pretty much everything she does. But
yeah,
how did you bring her on board? Did you write with her in mind for the part, or was she always just like, you know, like the first person you had when you was finished? How did she come on board? Because she's fantastic.
I did not write the part with anyone in mind. I write with actors in mind a lot, but it's only actors that I know, that I have a relationship with, like Larry Owens. Because it might be presumptuous, but I'm willing to assume that they'll do it. But I didn't want to paint myself into a corner where I was like, oh, it has to be this incredible actress that I have never met in my life, because then you're making a garment to someone's body, and then it's like, then you have to squeeze someone else into it, and then it ends up breaking. And so I just sort of left it loose, and Tilda got a hold of the script, and she was excited to talk about it, and that unlocked so much, that brought so much specificity. She became not American. Originally, she was supposed to be American. And that, I think, like, made her so real and specific, and not like an idea of a person, but an actual person. And then the really interesting thing is that everything Tilda says in the movie is ostensibly what's in the script. It's just like the way that she's embodying it that like became fully a creation for the movie.
Yeah, she really comes alive and just pops right off that screen with everything.
Yeah.
I mean, not just her way of speaking and the character work, but also the look, that frazzled, like, fruit punch color hair, and the outfits that match. And I especially love when she, you know, the fantasy sequences when she becomes this dragon-like figure. And I was curious about when in the writing process the sort of fairy tale tone to everything came, because I found when I was watching, that was one of the keys to the film working as well as it does.
It came pretty early. It was like when I decided to lean into that I felt like I had something that I was interested in making in my hands. And it just sort of came from like different angles. It was in, oh, what if Craigslist was a person, but not just any person, sort of like a sorceress, witch, omen thing. And then it's like, and then the idea of Elizabeth being a Hydra was very early in the movie. So then that was already like going towards fairy tale. And then like the visa process being this like hero's journey really like brought it. So it was like different parts of the movie were pointing to the same place, and that was this lens of seeing it through a fairy tale like perspective.
And then you got the perfect voice to narrate that, Isabella Rossellini.
Yeah.
was that similar to Tilda, where you just like, oh, let's see if we can, let's send her the script, and she was like, yes, absolutely,
100%.
I love that.
Yeah.
There are so many little details in this movie that I absolutely love about Alejandro.
And the reason why they're both 100% yes to this like first time director, I think, is because they're of the mindset that they don't graduate away from making small, interesting risks. That is why they are in the business. You know, it's not like, oh, they paid their dues with this kind of movie and now they're aware of something else. It's like, no, this is the kind of work that they're interested in making.
And that's why they are the queens that they are, and that we love them for.
Yeah.
So much of Alejandro seems like it is you, that it's really hard to envision someone else playing this part. Did you always see yourself playing Ale?
Yes and no. I definitely wrote it like as if it were me, but then when I started thinking about directing it, I was like, maybe it shouldn't be me, but then it's like, who would it be? And it just felt easier for me to do it.
Were you worried during prep for this and then shooting that this was just too much at all at any point? Or did you find that it actually did sort of work really smoothly because it was all coming from you anyway?
Yeah, the latter. I felt like it was actually easier that way to just like fully enter it and not have to like piecemeal it. Mm-hmm.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.
Yeah, and there are so many little details that you have put into Ale as a character that feels so little and real. And I have to know, because especially the one piece of hair that always goes the wrong way. I felt so seen. The amount of like shit that I have to put in my hair to go. So I had to was that just in there because it's your hair and that's what always happens? Or was this like a styling choice?
Here it is. It's what happens a lot. So then I felt like, oh, that is his signature. So we should lean into that.
Wonderful. I felt so seen. Thank you.
Thank you.
The little coterie of other individuals living in the apartment with Ale, you have obviously the actors you got to play them are so distinctive, and I assume these were all people you knew. But when you were writing them, how many bad roommate stories from your own life did you leave out?
I mean, here's the thing: I don't think of them as bad roommate stories. My friend Spike, who plays the roommate. It was my roommate for like 7 years in an apartment like that. And I think that Spike is playing a version of themselves before we got close, before we became the really, really close friends that we are now, when they were sort of like in their own world and I was in my own world and there was just a wall dividing us. But also just like, you know, adopted some caricature mannerisms from annoying people that we know. I don't think that the roommate situation is annoying. In fact, like to me, the tragedy is that Alejandro doesn't feel like he can just sit on that couch and hang out with them. That he feels like he has to put his life on hold, that he can't go to that party, that he can't like do all these things, and that there is actually a world for him. They're ready to embrace him, but he's just not in a place where he's ready to do that.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the story beat that really added something to the world of this film. And you have a lot of things like that. You have him and the roommates and the situation there and the whole side story with his mother's art piece that is coming up. And you have a lot of these things in there to flesh out Alejandro's world and the, you know, everything else that's going on. Did you ever worry that it was too much for one film, or that you needed to expand something, or like, how did you feel comfortable with where you were at?
Not worried, but maybe aware that is my instinct is to be more. And I think that is has a little bit to do with not taking for granted the chance that I got to make a movie. So it's sort of, I felt like it behooves me to put as much as I can, because I don't know. I'm not like, the chances that I would be able to do something like this were so unlikely So I don't want to like blow this by playing it really safe. So yeah, it is a lot. And but that is the mindset and the spirit and the mood I was in at the time.
Yeah. Well, I love that you said, we got this one opportunity. Let's go for broke. Let's do everything.
Yeah.
I wish more filmmakers would do that. Yeah. And I want to come back. This is, it's premiering a year after, it's coming to theaters a year after you premiered it. And over the course of that year, the discussion about migrant issues and immigration, I feel like, has been coming increasingly loud over that year. Do you think that now that it turned out that now is actually a better time for this film to have been released?
I mean, I'm pretty uncomfortable thinking of like dire political, the human toll of that being in any way a better time for
right.
a product to come out. But I, given that that is what happened, given that, that those are sort of like the cards that were being dealt, I hope to give some perspective, and I hope to encourage curiosity, and because I think the curiosity is the gateway to empathy, and just guide people into thinking about the other and into questioning the rules and the systems that are keeping so many people suffering, and in not just want to like help people win the game, but in questioning the game to begin with, which is, I think, where Alejandro's struggle is, that he doesn't just, he starts out wanting to just like win the board game, but then halfway through playing, he's like, why is any of this here?
Yeah, it's how he sort of realizes that the game is, if not exactly rigged, is perhaps more difficult than any reasonable person
would be expected to. Well, it's rigged in as much as if you play by the rules, then you are bound to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like, you know, like when you're like applying for like college in the US and there's like, oh, like you have to like cobble together where you're gonna get your various scholarships, write this little essay here, write this like jump this other hoop right here, do a little dance right here for like $100, $1,000, and then it's like, why does it cost that much to begin with? Why do I have to find other places to pay for this? Why is it so expensive to begin with? And I think that's the state of mind that Alejandro finds himself in.
Mm-hmm. And it's a powerful one to, and it's one that I think you put the audience in his shoes really, really well with these sequences. And that even a year after, the one visual from this that I remembered was those office doors that he kept having to climb through. And I just think of that every time now, whenever I think of specifically the issue of a United States visa, but with any bureaucracy now, like that is the image, because that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing. We are coming up on the end of our time together soon, but before we go, I did have to ask, you know, like, because again, like, there's so much time, so many things have happened since you premiered this movie, and I'm just wondering, how upset were you that Deceitful Diva Barbie was not featured in Greta Gerwig's Barbie movie?
I think she was too much of a threat.
Yes.
Too much of a threat. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's kind of giving straight to DVD sequel to the Barbie movie. Villain in the straight to DVD sequel.
Yes, I am here for that.
Yeah.
Julio, thank you so much again for joining us today. What can we look forward to next from you? What are you working on?
Oh my God. Well, I'm working on getting people to see this movie, and I'm at the same time finishing post-production on a HBO special sketch show thing I don't even know what to call it, that's gonna come out this year. So like, truly, like, the emails are piling up regarding me needing to get to back to work on that. So yeah,
can't wait to see it.
Thank you so much.
Looking forward to it. Thank you, Leo, so much.
Thank you.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening to Dan Baer's interview with the writer, director, producer, and star of the film Problemista, Julio Torres, here on the Next Best Picture podcast. Problemista is now playing in theaters from A24. You have been listening to the Next Best Picture podcast. We are proud to be part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, and you can subscribe to us anywhere where you subscribe to podcasts. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and your support, which you can also lend on over at Patreon. For $1 minimum a month, you'll get some exclusive podcast content from us. Thank you all so much for listening, as always, and we will see you all next time.
Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.